B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Well, for being retired, Rick Emmett sure has a lot of things going on. The former frontman from Triumph talks about the upcoming Triumph documentary that they're working on.
I think they were hoping to do the round of the film festivals in the fall.
People tend to forget, and when I say people, I mean me, what a great guitar player Rick was. I asked him, singer, songwriter, or guitarist? Which did he find himself more comfortable with?
When I was starting to learn how to play chords on a guitar, one of the first things I did was write a song. You know, a couple of chords and write a tune and play it for my mom. And she goes, oh, you're a genius. This is incredible. You're great. You know.
I also had to ask him about the loss of Rush's drummer, Neil Peart, and his thoughts about that.
He was a very private kind of a guy. And I respected that. I admire that in him.
It's music legend and Triumph frontman Rick Emmett today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Just a quick hit podcast here before we fire up the weekend as I record this on a Friday. I mean, after all, I live for the weekend. Hey, by the way, if you're a Triumph fan, make sure you go back and check out my interview with Mike Levine from the band back in December of 2019. I put the link to my podcast page in the description of the show. And Mike is such a great interview, so much fun to talk to. I asked him things like, for example, if he'd ever shave off that legendary mustache of his. He talked a lot about the heyday of Triumph and different things. Just a super fun guy. Man, I'll tell you what. December of 2019 seems like another lifetime ago as far as this whole COVID thing hit. I mean, just the world's gone topsy-turvy since I talked to him. Anyways, Rick Emmett's on today, of course, 5 decades in this business. His latest stuff is called Folk Songs for the Farewell Bonfire, otherwise referred to as the Bonfire Sessions. I got a link to his website on the description of the show as well. You can check out all the downloads he's got from all his solo projects. Just a lot of stuff. We do talk a little bit about that today. We talk a lot about Triumph and different things coming up in the interview with Rick here in just a few minutes. By the way, if you like this podcast, I would appreciate a 5-star rating. Even if you give it a 3-star rating, it's fine if you don't like it that much. But if you do like it, give it a 5-star rating. Why not? Hey, I'm a good guy. I'll send you a thank you card or something. Write a review, Apple, iTunes, the whole thing. We do appreciate that. And, of course, we appreciate you listening as well. In the meantime, this is one of these three-way calls, but a little bit better connection than the Roger Glover interview I had a couple days ago. And it was a really great conversation with Rick Emmett. And as I alluded to here in the beginning, I haven't talked to Rick Emmett in like over 2 decades, but a really good guy, really nice guy, great band. Go back and check out some of those older Triumph records if you get a chance. His guitar playing, the solos are just unbelievable. I brought that up in the interview as well. Here it is. It's Rick Emmett today on Talkin' Rock with me, Meltdown.
I love your name.
You know, I don't know if you remember this or not, but I worked in Buffalo in the early 1990s. I came to Detroit in 1995, but I've actually interviewed you in the studio in Buffalo several moons ago.
And you were a Meltdown even in those days?
Even in those days, yeah. So there you go.
Oh, well, it's nice to speak to you again.
Yeah, nice.
Are you emotional in nature or nuclear?
I would probably have to say maybe more emotional. I don't know. But, you know, Art Wander gave me that name. Do you remember Art Wander?
No, it's a great name.
Yeah, well, the name goes way back to high school. But enough about me. How you doing, man? Everything all good in your world?
Yeah. It's been a sort of a surreal experience this last little bit. I mean, never mind the COVID thing, which, you know, contributes to it. But just having a record company that goes, hey, we'd like to put out your whole back catalog. You good with that? And I go, yeah, that's great, you know.
Yeah, it kind of gets you back out there again, for sure.
Yeah, and you know, then the Triumph documentary, and I got my own new album on my own website. So there's just been a lot of stuff that's been going on. So it's, I feel like, hey, wasn't retirement a great career move?
Yeah, you're like the Ozzy of Canada.
Yeah,
but
true.
You know, I talked to Mike Levine before the end of the year last year, and it was funny because we were talking about the documentary, and that still has yet to come out. Then, of course, this pandemic hits, and this idiot with a mullet and a tiger becomes a worldwide star. You guys would have had a really captive audience back in, like, March or something, you know?
Yes. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the documentary, the Banger is a, they know what they're doing, and they certainly go to a lot of depth and detail. And the Triumph documentary, which the working title was Lay It on the Line, I don't know if it's going to stay that way or not, but they're going to make sure that it's good and it's exactly what they want before they put it out. And I think they were hoping to do the round of the film festivals in the fall, but it might go now just directly to Netflix or something. I don't know. You know, I have no idea how that'll work, and it's their thing to do. But certainly for me, it was a very interesting experience to you know, very kind of, hey, Rick Emmett, this is your life, and you're going back, you know, several decades, and they're going into a lot of detail, and you kind of go, wow, you know, I didn't realize it was maybe this important. You know, but maybe it was important to me, but how could it be important to other people? But they did a thing where, and I guess Mike already mentioned this, they flew in all of the fans from all over the world, and we did do a reunion and play three songs kind of thing. That was really cool. So, yeah, it's been a very interesting time of my life. Roundhill going, let's put out all your records. I go, gee, okay, you know. And then on my website, we're doing the folk songs for the Bonfire, and that stuff's coming out, and it's doing really well. Like, people are interested. I think, as you described, the COVID thing is maybe making it so that people are, they're not as distracted by so many other kinds of things going on. So, you know, as they kind of cocoon a little, there's a little bit more going on in terms of listening and reading and, yeah.
Yeah. So last night, as I do sometimes when I talk to artists, I put a bunch of your records on the turntable to kind of, you know, prepare for the interview today. And it's funny because I started thinking to myself as I'm listening to all these records, do you consider yourself a better singer, songwriter, or guitarist? Because some of that stuff is unbelievable.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Self-defining wise, you know, yeah, there's three elements here. We got singing, guitar playing, and songwriting. And when I was a little kid, and I was 7 years old, my mom would drag me off to church choir practices, and I would literally be singing in the church choir, boy soprano, 7 years old. Yeah. So singing was the thing that started me off in a musical life. You know, I had got a guitar. The Beatles play on Ed Sullivan in February 1964, and the whole world changes. You know, now everybody wants to be a guitar player, you know.
Right.
And the guitar becomes pretty important to me. And in quick succession, you know, over the next few years, and when I'm in high school, you've got Clapton and Hendrix and Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page. And, you know, now I'm being led down the garden path towards English progressive bands. And Steve Howe comes along, and yes, and I'm going, man, if I could ever grow up and become that kind of a guy, I would love a life like that, you know, being in a band, playing eclectic kinds of music and stuff. But, you know, when I was starting to learn how to play chords on a guitar, one of the first things I did was write a song, you know, a couple of chords and write a tune and play it for my mom. And she goes, oh, you're a genius. This is incredible. You're great. You know, so, yeah, you know, so you're getting all that positive reinforcement for the, but at now, you know, let's flash forward 50 years, 60 years. You get to the point where you're an old fart and you're going, all right, what is my life about? I think the writing is the thing that's at the core of, you know, who I am and what I've been able to do over the course of my life and what I'll still be able to do until the day that I die. Like, you know, I might not be able to sing as high as I used to. My fingers might have become, you know, a little more arthritis in one of my wrists and one of my fingers doesn't work so good. Yeah, you can still play enough guitar to get by as a songwriter, you know. So, you know, I think the creativity of it is at the core of it, of all of it, but the writing is the thing that, you know, will stand by me until, you know, I'm pushing up daisies.
Yeah, some of those guitar solos, I was listening, I'm like, man, I totally forgot how good that was. But when I was talking to Mike last year, too, I was surprised, you know, to learn. You guys never really toured with Rush. And then, of course, about a month after I talked to Mike, Neil Peart passed away. What did you know Neil? What are your thoughts about Neil?
I met Neil only on a couple of occasions, and Neil was not the kind of man who liked to go to industry functions.
Right.
You know, he didn't do meet and greets. He didn't hang around after gigs. You know, he was a very private kind of a guy, and I respected that. I admire that in him. You know, kinship-wise, Alex and I were always, you know, well-suited to each other, I think. And Alex came when Triumph was just a bar band playing the Gasworks on Yonge Street in Toronto.
Yeah.
You know, Alex came down to the gig and had a couple of beers and introduced himself to me. And, you know, we've done guitar workshops together. And, of course, he played on one of my records. I did a record for Mascot, Pro Vogue, a few years back, 2016, I think. And Alex played on a couple of tracks. And he's a gentleman. He's a tremendous artist. If he'd have decided he wanted to be a painter, he would have been a great painter. Like, if he'd been a poet, he would have been a great poet. But, you know, he was a guy that picked up electric guitar and, you know, eventually was in this band. And Rush, we were always riding on their coattails. You know, they were always, you know, a bigger thing than us, breaking other markets, playing all over the world. And we owed a lot to them. And Ged, I don't really know Geddy that well at all. I think I've only said hello to him once. And he and I, we share something. He had a son that ended up playing baseball at a fairly high level, and my son also ended up playing NCAA Division I in the States on a scholarship. And so, and I see Geddy at the ball games. He's got great seats, so he's, you know, the center field camera shows him sitting in the second row with his scorecard,
right,
you know.
Right.
So we get to see Geddy here in Canada, you know, practically every night when they allow people into the stadiums. But I don't know him that well. Alex is kind of the guy that was my bud.
All right, last question, since I'm running out of time here. I could ask you about a million different things, but last thing for you. Back in the days of Triumph, I mean, you guys gained some success pretty quick. How big was it for you guys to gain success, not only in your home country of Canada, but also in the U.S. and maybe even perhaps the rest of the world?
I think in Gil's mind, the drummer Gil Moore, I think the success in the United States was always, you know, a priority for him. And I was, you know, more of a kind of a junior partner, the guitar player guy who came in, you know, last into the trio. And, you know, it was just point me in the right direction. I'll play the gig. But Gil, he had a mindset. And, of course, Mike understood how radio worked. And I think Mike became one of the great radio promo guys of the early 80s. Like, he would be able to phone up program directors and MDs anywhere, know them first name basis. He would go to the conventions and chat people up. And, like, Mike was really a tremendous salesman of the band. So, you know, that, being in Triumph was a tremendous thing. It was very unique. We were self-managed, self-directed, and that was really on the shoulders of the other two guys. So, in the end, I think the goal was to have, you know, try to be able to play all the arenas in the United States, and we did that. And even, like, we'd go on tour England, and we'd come back and we'd say, well, we didn't make much money, and the showers were kind of cold in the hotels and stuff. Let's just go to San Diego next time.
I hear you. Well, listen, it's been good to catch up with you after 25 plus years. Good luck on the bonfire sessions, the digital downloads, the documentary, which I asked Mike about too, and he said, I asked him about if it was going to be like the Anvil doc, and he said, as much as I love that, I don't think we could do it that way. So,
yeah. There's different. Every band has a different story, right? So, and Banger is good at telling the unique nature of every band's story. So I'm looking forward to it, for sure. But it was nice chatting with you, Meltdown. It's great.
All right, Rick. Well, thanks for everything and your years of success. Congratulations. Have fun in your retirement or whatever your – yeah, I guess it's not retirement anymore. So.
No. Somebody kicked the rock off the top of the hill, and it's picking up momentum on its way down. So.
All right. Well, we'll see you soon. Good luck with everything. Appreciate the time.
All right, thanks, Meltdown.
Rick Emmett today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. And, you know, that's one of those interviews, and I have these every once in a while. Growing up in Western New York and now spending half of my life here in Detroit, it's a border city to Canada, so we get a lot of Canadian music over here. And, I mean, I was inundated as a kid listening to Rush and, you know, bands like Triumph and different bands from across the border, you know, Kim Mitchell and whatnot. So whenever I talk to somebody like a Rick Emmett, it means a lot to me because that's where I grew up. That's, you know, those are like kind of my roots and stuff. And talking to somebody like Rick is really kind of special. So got to thank him for the time. And thank you guys for listening as well. We got some interviews locked and loaded, I do believe, for next week. As a matter of fact, I'm scheduled to talk to another member of a legendary classic rock type band coming up here next week as well. I don't want to give away too much. In case you're new to the podcast, I don't like to give away too much because I've jinxed myself several times. I've even had stuff recorded in the past where I talked about it, and then for whatever reason, I lost the recording. It was erased or whatever the case is. So I try not to mention the artists I have coming up. As always, subscribe, tell your friends, share it, and like I said earlier, 5-star ratings and reviews on Apple and iTunes are always much appreciated. Thank you so much for checking out Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. Hit it, boys!
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.